Hi, I'm Jeff Davis. Let's pack up the car and head out on the wine road. Today we're going to enjoy a nice visit with Claudia Shug of Shug Carneros Estate Winery in Southern Sonoma. I met her at 10 a.m. and we started off by tasting six wines. Not necessarily the breakfast of champions, but I was up for the challenge. Claudia is a very pleasant woman, as you'll hear in the interview. We had quite a few laughs. I don't know if that was the wine or just her easygoing nature. Later in the interview, I'll tell you about the wine and cheese tasting she offered that you too can enjoy. Shug is one of the few German heritage winemaking families in California, and their winemaking history began with Claudia's grandparents in Germany.
That's right. Yeah, it's we often talk just about my grandfather on my father's side, but my grandfather on my mother's side was also a winemaker.
And your father, Walter, met and fell in love with your mother, Gertrude, then went off to learn winemaking. And why don't you quickly share the story of how your father went as far as California and ended up going back to your mother mm-hmm. and then moving back here to the States for good.
Yeah, my father and mother met in the Pfalz. My father is originally from the Rheingau wine-growing region, which is maybe about, say, an hour or hour and a half away, depending on how fast you drive. And my father met my mother while he was working at a winery in the Pfalz. And following that job, he received an invitation to come to California and work as an intern for a California wine company. At the time, in the late 50s, a lot of the wine growing was down in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. And he was in a town near Delano, near Bakersfield in Delano. And when he worked there for 1 year, he showed so much talent that they asked him to take on a retiring, his boss's position. He was retiring. So that opportunity really piqued his interest, and he then went back to Germany via the UK, where my mother was taking care of some children as an au pair. And he asked her if she had, first of all, if she would like to marry him, and second of all, would she like to come to California? So
that's a
yes to both. Yes.
Two big questions, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, big questions. And then they went back together to the Pfalz to ask her parents if that would be okay. Hmm. And so
He'd done some other winemaking studying, too, didn't he? Other wineries in the German and England region?
Yes, in fact, yeah. He, as part of his studies at the Geisenheim University, which is the most renowned oenology and viticultural college or university, he was required to do some internships at different wineries. So through his father, who was the director of a state-owned winery, he had connections to the other state-owned wineries, Staatsweingut. So he was he apprenticed or did internships in various wineries around the Hessen.
So he had some skills when he went to California.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. In fact, he was probably one of the better trained imports to California, because at the time after Prohibition, there really wasn't that culture of winemaking. It was prior to Prohibition, it was quite California had quite a famous status in the world as winemaking area, but Prohibition, you know, really
killed it.
They were happy to have immigrants with talent. With talent and training, and so he was really had a good situation
right.
there. Yeah,
I love how your website explains when your parents moved over here. The newlyweds crossed America in their Volkswagen Beetle, complete with skis on the back and custom-made luggage to fit in every corner of the car.
Yes,
what a visual!
That is a great visual. We do have a photo of the VW Bug, and
it's pretty small quarters.
I hope you put it up on your site.
And yes, I did. You can see that photo and a few others on my website, onthewineroad.com.
So yeah, they did. They took a ship from Bremen to New York mm-hmm. and brought their car over on a separate ship, and then they made their way to California
That was Germany's grand vehicle, wasn't it?
The
Volkswagen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it wasn't long before your father got a pretty good gig with E&J Gallo, which covered a wide territory.
That's right, yeah. He, being down in that area of Central Valley and not far from Modesto, he did get to know the Gallos, and they hired him to be their grower relations liaison up in the Napa Valley North Coast area. So he was liaising with all the growers that were delivering their grapes to Gallo in the 60s. Mm. And that gave him a lot of information as to where the best grapes were being grown.
Wow, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Just a few weeks ago, I had Joel Peterson of Ravenswood Winery on my show.
Oh.
And he talked about how he helped Joseph Phelps build his winery in the early 70s. And apparently your father was there about the same time.
Yes. My father was actually hired by Joe Phelps before the winery was actually built. They actually scouted out the property together to buy and purchase. And my father then, scoped out the area to where to plant what grapes, and helped with the construction of the winery building as to how it should be laid out for optimal production process. And Joe was a construction company owner, Hensel Phelps Construction Company, and so he knew the ins and outs of building buildings, and also was a wine collector and knew what was good wine. And my father was the one who could carry out his wishes and dreams, and together collaborating to make excellent wine and to make history in the Napa Valley. So
yeah, talking about history, making history, they were the first to grow Syrah in the U.S., huh?
Yeah, to bottle it as a varietally labeled wine.
Maybe some were growing it, they just didn't
have
it.
Yeah, I don't really know the history of the Syrah plantings in California, but at the time in the 60s and early 70s, some wines were still being labeled generically and not really with a variety on the label.
Right.
And Syrah, maybe as being a grape variety that wasn't really well known, possibly then vanishing into blends. And that's the claim to fame, I think, at that time is my father recognizing that the grape variety was important to name, as it is in Germany. In Germany, you know, you always see Riesling on the label, you'll see Spätburgunder on the label. That is part of the German culture, is to use a varietal name. Part of the French culture was always historically to use a regional name,
right,
and not a varietal name. So I think that might be the influence of that German mindset, is to put the grape on the label.
And interestingly, Petit Syrah did have a history in the U.S. prior to that and during that period. So Petit Syrah had a name by that time, but Syrah must not have.
Not at the time, no. But Petit Syrah was a blending grape, usually for Zinfandel. And it was well-liked as a blending grape by growers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at Joseph Phelps, your dad learned to make and appreciate Pinot Noir, and that's where his future kind of gained some traction.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that it was also the motivation of my father to make a Pinot Noir, because he was growing up on a Pinot Noir estate in Germany.
Yeah, and I read that, and it's like, I didn't realize Pinot. I know it has different names over there, but I didn't
realize. Spätburgunder, yeah.
Yeah.
And no one usually associates Pinot Noir or Spätburgunder with the Rheingau region, which is famous for Riesling. But there was a sub-region, a very small area that was a little warmer and perpendicular to the Rhine, that was a little warmer and could get the Pinot Noir grapes ripe. And that was the Höllenberg, the Hell's Mountain, Höllenberg is that, where the Pinot Noir grape was growing. So my father actually he always says he was nursed on Pinot Noir. And I'm pretty sure that was his motivation as well, to get Joseph Phelps to also make a Pinot Noir, not just a Cabernet or a Zinfandel. In fact, Joseph Phelps, my father was first making a lot of Riesling as well at Joseph Phelps. And that was a popular variety in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You don't hear about the problem of it being warm enough for Pinot Noir over here.
Oh, No.
And even in the cool climates, it's like, that's warm?
Yeah.
So I guess in that region in Germany, it's pretty warm.
It needs a little bit more boost, yeah.
Yeah, huh. up until this time, your parents were still in Napa Valley, mm-hmm. and it wasn't until 1989 when they came over here to the Sonoma-Carneros region.
Yes. My father was making wine for Joseph Phelps through 1983, although our brand started in 1980. At the time, it was probably a new thing that winemakers could parallel to their real job, the money-making job that they could make and dabble and make their own wine. Nowadays, you see it more often, winemakers making their own brand. But he, in 1980, started making the Pinot Noir under his own label because Joseph Phelps saw that it was difficult to sell. And Joseph Phelps condoned it, that my father made his own brand at 1980 through 1983. In 1989, my father was keeping his eyes open for a piece of property to put the estate, to plant some vines. It took a while, but he always had his eyes on this region, the Carneros region, and knew it was ideal for Pinot Noir.
Right.
So
we certainly picked a wonderful spot.
Yeah.
Up here on the hill, yes. Looking over the valley. It's a beautiful location.
Right. No, it's really, really special.
Well, when he was working with Joseph Phelps, he must have been pulling the Pinot Noir grapes from Carneros on the Napa side, right?
Yes, partially. I think there was a Shellville label. There was a grower's label, actually from the Napa Valley on Diamond Mountain, called the Heinemann Vineyard.
Oh, yeah.
So it was high elevation, had a bit of the winds coming in on volcanic soil. So he was taking it from a cooler region that was available to him. At the time, he had to choose where the Pinot Noir grape was being grown.
I would have loved to have tried that Pinot from the mountain with the volcanic soil.
We still have some bottles in the cellar.
Do you?
Some older vintages.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but what are the price of those?
Well, you can't buy them.
Yeah, they're priceless.
Sorry.
So the winery's rolling along, and your twin sister, Andrea, helps out with the financial support, and you move off to Germany.
Yeah.
Well, so you told me a minute ago, earlier, before we started recording, but what was your inspiration behind moving over there?
Well, I was living in San Francisco, and I was introduced to a German gentleman whom I followed.
It was a man.
So to speak. A man, yes. It was love and the heart. Love. You follow your heart, and also curiosity and adventure, sense of adventure as well. And so I did. I moved to Germany.
Well, we should point out, too, that this was before your family got this property and started building the
correct.
Winery.
Correct. So. And then at the time, also, my brother had started working with my family, with my parents. And he was the one who was always around on location to support and to build up the sales.
However, but you went over and you helped the winery eventually grow with your import business.
Exactly. I started an import company in Germany and took on my family's wines at first, and then I added a few brands to that.
Wow, what a clever way to get your family's winery noticed.
Yeah, I mean, we had a German background, a German history, so it was always an interesting story to tell.
Were they interested in that, to hear, to try a California-grown German wine maker?
Yes, they were. In fact, at the time when I started into the importing, there was a big fan base in Germany for my family's wines, and it was easy to talk about our wines and get them to the customer.
I bet.
Yeah.
You certainly knew the history.
Yeah. So on that, I created this import company to represent several California brands.
We just met like about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't realize that you had just returned a couple of weeks before that. So you're kind of fresh to being back to America.
Yeah, 5 weeks already now, today.
Your mother passed away in 2007, and your father just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. If you know it off the top of your head, tell us about some of his other wine accolades, some of the things he did that were unique.
Well, the accolades were at the height of the attention everyone was giving to Napa Valley in the 70s. With Joseph Phelps, he created a Bordeaux blend, a Meritage wine, with a proprietary name called Insignia. That was really a first in California or at all in the United States. Really, some wines would get bottled with a brand name or a red blend name, but never really with a proprietary name. And a Bordeaux blend also being quite new to to California.
Up until that time, it was just basically Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, or in the early days, you would name your wine Claret, or you would give it a regional name that told you kind of what the style of wine would be, like Chablis or Hardy Burgundy.
And so,
you know, they had to figure out, because there were laws about what the percentage grape in a wine, if it had to be minimum of 75% of a single varietal in order to put that on the label. But if you went under that 75%, you had to think about, were you just going to call it red wine?
Yeah.
Did that have enough cachet? So they gave it a proprietary name called Insignia.
Clever.
Yeah. So that's one of his accolades. There's quite a few others, you know, late harvest Rieslings, Botrytsized Rieslings, the Syrah that we just spoke about, varietally labeled.
You mentioned Botrytsized, and that's what lends to a dessert wine.
Correct, yeah.
It's when the mold gets in there, the fungus, and turns it, and oddly enough, it turns out to be a very appealing flavor that it adds to the grape.
It's called the noble mold, and noble rot, and it creates a very concentrated sweet wine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah, I noticed that your father has done some dessert Riesling and even Gewürztraminer, but did he ever try to grow a standalone still wine?
As in Riesling, or
since that's also part of his heritage, and I would think that it would almost be cool enough here, although you don't hear much about those grapes being grown here in Carneros.
Yes, there is Riesling around in the cool zones of California. A lot of it's been grown up in Mendocino,
but they grow Pinot Noir up there. So I thought, if you can grow Pinot Noir in like Anderson Valley, why can't you grow it down here?
I don't know why Riesling hasn't found its way more in this region, but we do make a late harvest Riesling. We get the grapes from Lake County.
Oh.
And so it's a small, very, very small production that we don't distribute widely. It's actually just sold through the tasting room. Yes. And it's a nice
addition. That's a warm region, too.
Unless
it's closer to the lake, up in the hills, maybe.
Yeah, Lake County can have some really cool spots to it. And
Now, when did your winemaker, Michael Cox, join Shug? He joined before your father passed away.
Correct. Oh, yeah, they had been working together quite some time. I believe it was 1995.
Oh.
So we're looking at 22 years now. Mm. And he was picked up our philosophy. His palate is similar. He's very interested and curious about tasting wines from all over the world. So he constantly is tasting wines from Europe. There's a danger, of course, of a winemaker getting a cellar palate. They get used to only their own cellar or their region.
Right.
It's really important to taste outside of the region.
You're probably helping him with that, right?
Yes, we do. And his curiosity, and you were asking about other grape varieties growing in Carneros, and also through the curiosity and openness of Mike Cox and a European, more European-minded palate, he picked up some Saint Laurent grape, spelt Laurent, and we got in our second vintage this morning, so four bins of... Ricci Vineyard, Carneros, St. Laurent, and it's the first vintage is 2016, and it's been bottled, so.
Huh. That'll be interesting to try.
It's a red grape that's quite fruity, nice deep purple color, beautiful, you know, fruity characteristics, similar to Pinot, but just a little softer.
If we want to sound worldly, should we call a Saint Laurent?
Saint Laurent, yes.
Great. As I mentioned earlier, Claudia had a nice wine and cheese pairing set up for me when I arrived at the Shug tasting room. And briefly, here's how that went. We started off with the 2013 Shug Rouge de Noir Brut sparkling wine. It was crisp and delicious and served with a St. George cow's milk from Joe Matos Cheese Factory in Santa Rosa. That was followed by the 2016 Sauvignon Blanc from Sonoma Coast, which was delightful and paired nicely with the Fromage Blanc from Bellwether Farms in Petaluma. That's a goat's milk. The 2014 estate-grown Chardonnay from Carneros went very nicely with the Mount Tam Triple Cream Brie from Cowgirl Creamery at Point Reyes Station. Then we had two Pinots, the 2013 Heritage Reserve Pinot Noir from Carneros and the estate-grown 2013 Carneros Pinot Noir.
The first served with Estero Gold from the Valley Forge Cheese Company, a cow's milk. The estate grown was paired with Toma cow's milk from Point Reyes Farmstead Cheese Company. And we wrapped it up with the 2013 Cabernet Sauvignon Heritage Reserve from Sonoma Valley. And that one very nice with the Midnight Moon goat's milk cheese from Cypress Grove in Arcata, California. This is a tasting that any of you can enjoy in the tasting room at Shug Carneros Estate Winery. And as you could tell, they do a great job of getting samples of cheese from around the entire region. Shug was in the middle of harvest, so as I sat on the patio with Claudia, you likely heard the trucks full of grapes passing by in the background. The patio was across the parking lot from the Hillside Vineyards and not far from the lily pond, enjoyed by frogs and ducks. There's even a little house mid-pond for the ducks. When I met Claudia prior to this interview, she was with her daughter. She lives in London, so I asked Claudia if there were any other third-generation family members who may carry on the Shug business.
Well, my brother has two children, his son Stephen and daughter Bess, or Elizabeth, and his son is just turned 21, but even prior to that, he was working in the cellar on school breaks, and now that he's turned 21, he's been doing some work in the tasting room.
He's already at it.
Yes, yes, he's very good at
right.
it.
Yeah. And now you're here for good.
Yes, yes, I'm here for good, and I feel very good about it. And in Germany, we say we have two hearts beating in my chest. Mm. One is in Europe, in Germany, and one is in California. And I've enjoyed the privilege of living in both countries. And I enjoy the benefits of both countries, because each country has its positive sides and negative sides. So I hope that through my job with the winery, my role is to take care of the exports. And I built up the European market as our representative over in Europe, selling wine into the Scandinavian market, into the Nordics, we call that Norway, Sweden, into the UK, the Netherlands, Germany, of course, Denmark. And that is really important to me, to expand on the exports, not only in Europe but in Asia. So I'm really working at now here as my home base, working full-time on this project. I'm looking at those markets and expanding our sales outside of the United States.
What percentage of your production is going out of country?
It varies according to, sometimes we have lower yield production, we have less production, but percentage-wise, it varies according to some of the contracts we get with the airlines, for example. We did get a large order from Swiss Air, nice. And it's flying now in the summer on the business class long haul flights, so that tends to up our percentage. So we're around 10 to 15% export quotient, and hopefully I can improve on that because it's a delight to work with other markets and to get them on board with our wines and to get them to appreciate it, because it's just, I always say, it's better to not have your apples in one basket, or your eggs. I guess that's the German term, is the apples, the eggs, or the American.
That's funny. I've been catching that with you. I can tell it. You're
yes.
fresh off the boat, more
yes,
or less, because
exactly.
You're saying a lot of things.
So the eggs in one basket, it's better to have our distribution a little bit wider, and also to spread the word across different countries.
Great. Well, if you can get into the Asian market, that's a huge burgeoning region and interest in wine.
Yeah, we are in China. We have an importer in Shanghai. We have representation in Japan.
Excellent.
And those are strong markets. So I plan to travel there and take care of our importers.
And I don't hear many wineries around here talking like that. Really looking to export and concentrating on that so much.
Actually, there is not as much a need nowadays in the United States. It's one of the fastest growing wine markets in the world, so you really don't need to go outside of the United States. But we've had our market crashes and our economic crises, and it's that can really influence your sales. And it's always good to have a little bit, have your wines going elsewhere
right.
where maybe that isn't affected as much. So.
Germany especially, that's a pretty strong
country. Yeah, generally we're fairly strong, a very conservative nation, not taking too many risks and financially strong. Yeah.
That's funny you just said we, too. Oh. Yeah, we're a stronger country.
Oh, gosh. I hope I don't get deported if I said that.
And I understand you're pursuing your Master of Wine certification as if you're not busy enough.
Oh, gosh.
But you've been working on that, and fortunately you had Europe at your disposal for quite a while, so...
It's been an amazing journey with the Master of Wine, the Institute of Masters of Wine, based in London. And because I was in Europe, in Germany, I had the opportunity to go to different wine growing regions in Europe, the classic regions, as we would call them, and broaden my perspective on what's out there. And that's important also, being a California winery, is not to think that the world stops here. We have to have a broader perspective of what's out there in the world, respect for the classics, not always copying, needing to copy the classics. We have our own style, but there's a certain respect you have to have for what those countries have done before us. They worked on those styles for a long, long time. Wow. But the Master of Wine has given me a lot of knowledge, has made me inquisitive, made me question, has connected me to a network in the world that I wouldn't have had without it, in a very relaxed way, and like-minded people who are also pursuing the same qualification, amazing people in different roles of the wine industry. So it's been a great journey, and I don't know if it's going to end in success, but whether it's successful or not, it has given me amazing amount of knowledge and tools and confidence with representing our own brand.
I was going to say, I think it's going to lead to success with your brand, having that knowledge, for sure.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, it already has. Yeah. It has connected me to a few importers in a very relaxed and a very organic way. I don't have to go polishing doorknobs, because you just meet these people naturally, and we have good wine. There's a lot of good wine out there, but if people don't hear your story and connect with you, they can connect just as well with someone else. But if they meet you and they like you and you become friends, and you can also then become business partners and have a win-win relationship, which I like, is that usually that ends up being a very, very good relationship, and a loyal and a long one. Right. And I think that's important to have.
And I think our listeners, now that they've heard this, are going to think they know you and like you. And I think we've developed some friendships there already, some relationships.
I hope so. I'm really and getting to know the United States market, because I really haven't done any traveling here for the winery. And I'll be out there. I'll be in Denver I'll be in Aspen and Vail in November. I'm going up to Oregon for a trade tasting in Portland. And everywhere where we're needed, I will go to and enjoy meeting everyone who likes or is getting to know our wine, likes our wine, sells our wine, or is maybe unsure. But I want to convince them that our wine is great and we have a great story. And
well, you'll be a nice face to represent the winery, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. I hope so, and I enjoy it. So I think that's part of it, is the inner connection to this business has to be there. You have to be on board with talking about your wine and not getting tired of it.
I don't think she is concerned that will happen. What a pleasure it was to sit with Claudia for a while and hear her story. Find out more about Shug at shugwinery.com. That's shugwinery.com. If you're listening to this on iTunes or another podcast provider, you can learn more about my show at onthewineroad.com and on Facebook as well. I'm on Instagram under the name JD Wineroad and on Twitter at JD Wineroad. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for listening to this podcast of On the Wine Road.